RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Dark Delight Podcast with
Disinfected Hump Day Val.
Disinfected. That's good.
Yes.
That's good to hear. Oh, beans. I have an orange.
Yeah. Orange, you're glad I didn't say banana?
Yes, actually, because I left my banana downstairs.
Well, swallow it down, because no one wants to hear you chomp.
I'm doing it on purpose.
No one wants to hear it, Tracy.
I knew you wanted to hear it, so that's why.
No. I'm not the only one who has their soul torn out of their chest.
Listen, between you and chewing and possums.
Well, chewing is something different. Everybody has to chew when they eat their food, but not everybody has to do a podcast every day.
This is true. Okay.
So what's on the docket? I just retweeted a Superman chief from Hoboken. Who is sending officers right away. Yesterday, he sent officers right away to break up a very dangerous assembly of what seems to be two parents and three children on an empty boardwalk.
Oh, my gosh. Nice, I'm looking at this right now. How horrifying.
Nice sunny day. Beautiful sunny day.
It's horrifying. And look at the couple over there on the right side that appear to be in an embrace, Frank.
They seem to be looking out at the water, enjoying something that's not looks like the four walls of their living room, too.
Oh, my gosh. Oh my gosh!
And it was a tweet that was sent to this police chief from Hoboken from a woman named Marianne Blore, which is what a great name for
Marianne
such a busybody.
Blore is a ZGB mom 3. If you want to see the tweet, only if you want to see the tweet. I mean, I wouldn't recommend anyone go there and say anything nasty to Marianne. Of course,
no, this is ridiculous. What is that, drone footage? What are people even watching that they're taking screenshots from aerial views and sending it to the police if they see people walking outside? I don't even know what the, it's not her drone. So what are people watching that they're just sitting inside making sure everybody else is home? It's almost as stupid as the whole herd immunity theory when people explain it to me with vaccines. That your vaccine doesn't work unless I take it too.
Yeah, that's, I know. I never get that.
So if you've locked yourself in the basement and you're rubbing down every stick of celery that you own with Purell, how do you get coronavirus if I take my children for a walk in the park? I don't even care about the virus anymore. I'm horrified at what is going to be left behind.
Let's listen to this. This is perfect that you brought this up now, because this is a clip of Henry McMaster, governor of South Carolina, the other day in a press conference. You ready?
Yeah.
Very beginning. Yes, ma'am.
Governor, you encouraged churches to do their services online. While a church in Charleston held a service yesterday of more than 100 people who were not social distancing, the pastor said it's his constitutional right to keep it open until the governor says otherwise. Are you going to ask to stop the service? Why or why not? And does this constitute a danger to the public safety?
I can't speak for other governors, but this governor is not going to intrude on the First Amendment. That is an absolute right. We are encouraging pastors and others in any house of worship, any congregation of any kind, to use social distancing. That is, go online. Peggy and I go online with First Presbyterian Church in Columbia. It's a little different because you don't have the whole choir singing, and there aren't but three or four people in the church. It's a big church. But it works. It's good. But do it that way, or have the service outside with social distancing. Or if you must have a congregation under a roof, then use that social distancing. But that First Amendment right is very important, just like the others. And we're respecting that.
Good for him.
Good for him is right. That entire press conference made me almost cry. He said, we're closing down some more businesses. We're making some more mandatory, people really aren't listening to the guidance, so we're going to step it up a little bit. But he said, the whole time, he said, we are, in a constitutional republic. The state of South Carolina has a constitution. I'm a law and order guy. I've been a U.S. attorney. I've been an attorney general. I will not intrude on the people of South Carolina's constitutional rights, regardless of what sort of a thing we're facing here. And he said, someone asked him at the conference, you know, gun stores are still open. And he was like, that's the Second Amendment, just as important as the first. Freaking amazing.
Yep.
So there's a big difference. And someone brought up to me this morning, very, very aptly, you take a look at the map of where the numbers of these infections are, like how many, you know, where people are, where they have the most incidence of this. I'll give you one guess as to who is running those locations.
Who?
Democrats.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Stunning, isn't it? I was surprised.
Very stunning.
Very stunning. So yeah, we're seeing all different kinds of examples of this, but I'm starting to see tweets on my timeline, Frank. Like, my friend just texted me and said that there's a barbershop here in South Carolina that refused to shut down throughout this. They wouldn't do it. I don't know if they got any fines. Someone else said that stores are starting to text their people, we're open. If you want to come in, it's at your own risk. Maintain social distance and take care of yourselves. But we're open for business. People are done. They're finished. They're starting
out of necessity too, because if it's not over soon, then they're going to be finished in other ways.
Yeah.
And they have every right to save their lives. That is just as much as an attempt to save one's life, to go back to work and become productive and be able to subsist in life, or sustain anything that they had before. That you want to talk about life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. What the hell has been taken, if not this? Everything from the happiness to the liberty to the life.
Yeah, the people that are phoning in on their neighbors that are outside trying to play a game of basketball or something, go to hell. I don't want anything to do with you.
So from a KDVR.com, man was handcuffed in front of his daughter for allegedly violating social distancing for playing t-ball with her in an empty park.
Yeah.
I have over here in I think this is in San Diego. Yeah, San Diego. A couple days ago, police fined people $1,000 for sitting in their cars watching the sunset.
Oh, that's dangerous, Frank. You don't want to watch the sunset with your significant other anymore.
Yeah, it's very dangerous. Stay inside. You can watch any sunset in the world on the television.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You don't actually need to have contact with our star.
You know, because God forbid you get some vitamin D.
Yeah. God forbid you realize that you're connected to everything, that you are part of nature. You know, it's so that's what the story really has become now. I can't be bothered with the doom and gloom elsewhere. Whoever's peddling it. I've tuned out for the most part with the doom and gloom stuff. But this is really. This is the front and center story, and it is relevant to everything because it's going to be the new lens through which we look at the current events of the day now. Everything, even to how the election in November is going to be worked.
It's so funny. I retweeted something last night. I forget who it was. Let me find it. It was someone tell the Democrats that they can't push the fear that Trump will move the November election and be outraged that the Wisconsin primary wasn't moved at the same time. Because that's what the big hubbub was about their primary. Then I have a representative from South Carolina here, one of the only Democrats in the state that won through cheating against Arrington, the one who got into the car accident. Mm-hmm. You remember her, Katie Arrington? She got into a car accident here in South Carolina, almost died.
I remember that.
Yeah, she still ran and everything. Well, he won against her. He cheated. I know that for a fact. But anyway, he posted yesterday and he said, hold on. Is this happening to you that your timeline is like jumping all over the place lately? Like you have something in front of you, but then it jumps?
I don't remember. I don't know.
Okay.
I've had, no.
Sorry.
I have a lot of other computer problems. That's not one.
Yeah, no, I know. Okay, so he says, today I called on our state leaders to delay the June 9th primary. We should not be putting people and their families in harm's way by encouraging them to congregate in polling locations before it's safe. I cannot in good conscience encourage my constituents to stand in long lines and enter schools, libraries, and churches before we have seen the other side of this deadly virus. There are many steps the state can take to encourage voting and responsible public health. Now is the time to have a robust and transparent conversation about how to conduct our primary as safely as possible.
It goes without saying that who has ever jumped onto this train is, I mean, praying. They have. There's a small part of them, at least, that is probably praying.
It goes on.
That it goes on and it becomes deadlier than the average flu.
Yeah, this person here is saying, this is Joe Cunningham.
And they have to be.
He got 116 likes, 16 retweets, and 18 comments. And my response was, hey, I know it feels like we lived through April and May already, but it's only April. We'll be fine by June. Perhaps you should focus on how to avoid losing the primary. I got more retweets and likes than his original tweet did, and all from people in South Carolina.
Nobody. See, that's the other thing here, too. Reach for these people is I mean, they don't have a lot of. There are a few heavy hitters. There are definitely heavy hitters out there for everybody. But I mean, reach is awful. They don't have it. There's really nothing that goes on there unless somebody tweets something and then a news network picks it up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like our friend the other day, the nurse.
Unreal.
So there's that going on. Like they're already somebody and a good friend of mine this morning tweeted, hey, when are we going to start the inquiry into Chinese election interference?
Yeah. Yeah, no. Yeah, that'll happen. That'll happen. I can't wait. I can't wait to see the blueprint of what this new investigation from Adam Schiff is going to be like in the late spring.
Trump is a racist. He's a racist.
Yeah. Yes, he didn't move fast enough with his racist policies. Yeah. That's what the new angle is going to be. They didn't want him to go and shut down borders and international air travel because it was xenophobic. And now they're going to say that his xenophobic ways weren't kicked into action soon enough.
Yesterday, the newest thing, Frank, now is about hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah.
So can From or the New York Times or anyone in mainstream media prove this is wrong? So basically, this is it. In the midst of a pandemic, the president of the United States is promoting a quack remedy in which he holds a financial interest. Okay. He says, a few minutes ago, I posted the below. I'm taking it down because my phrasing distracted from the issue. The issue is not whether or not the drug works. The issue is the president should not hold financial interest in drugs he promotes, whether they work or not. Now, let us not even start to get into the ridiculous double standard that is. But this is what Cernovich did. According to Trump's financial disclosure, he owns between $1,000 to $15,000 of Dodge and Cox Fund. Dodge and Cox's fund has 2.9% of its money in Sanofi. Trump owns 2.9% of between $1,000 and $1,500,000. Trump owns $29 to $435 of stock. The New York Times didn't think anyone would do the math because in one of his mutual funds, his money's diversified into a company that's diversified into another company. Ridiculous. Now.
Yeah. You know how I've been diversifying?
How?
I have about 3 ounces of silver.
Ooh.
Yes, I have 3 silver coins now.
That's diversification if I've ever seen it.
Yes. So if our money gets turned to dust tomorrow, I know that I could at least rebuild our fortune.
On those 3 pieces of silver?
On the 3 pieces of silver.
I have some silver.
So.
Here's something interesting that I poo-pooed on the other podcast the other day. Because I didn't trust the guy that was saying it.
Oh, you're talking about the doctor from Brooklyn?
Yes.
Telling you, it was listening to him was very, very interesting.
I doubted him, and I still am not 100% on him, to be honest. But I've seen enough. I started looking into it and researching it a little because it was enough. It was enough that I was like, maybe I shouldn't be so closed-minded about this. And here's a thread from Michael Caudry, who takes some of this research. Makes perfect sense. You want to go through it real quick?
Sure.
COVID-19 is causing prolonged and progressive hypoxia, which is starving your body of oxygen, by binding to the heme groups in hemoglobin in your red blood cells. Patients are progressively desaturating or losing O2 in their blood, as a result, it's leading to organ failure. COVID-19 glycoproteins bond to the heme groups, and in doing so, the oxidative iron ion is disassociated or released from red blood cells. Without that ion, hemoglobin can no longer bind to oxygen, rendering the red blood cell useless. It's very likely this is much more the case rather than developing a form of ARDS or pneumonia. Doctors are starting to believe that they're operating under a false notion of pneumonia and possibly treating the wrong symptoms on a systematic basis throughout the country. Ventilators may not be treating the root cause, as many of the patients' lungs aren't tiring out. They're performing or pumping just fine. It is instead that the affected hemoglobin have been stripped of their ability to carry oxygen, resulting in hypoxia. So the body compensates for that lack of O2 carrying capacity by having your kidneys release hormones, which tell your bone marrow factories to ramp up production on new red blood cells with freshly made and fully functioning hemoglobin. This is the reason you find elevated hemoglobin and decreased blood oxygen saturation as one of the three primary indicators of poor prognosis for a particular patient. If the patient's immune system doesn't fight off the virus in time before their blood oxygen saturation drops too low, ventilator or no ventilator, organs start shutting down. And the only way to keep them going is by delivering oxygen or a transfusion of red blood cells. This is why it is absolutely crucial to treat patients in an outpatient setting with hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin before they deteriorate and have to go to the ICU. Hydroxychloroquine is also used for malaria, a pathogen that also interferes with the red blood cells. Malaria uses host hemoglobin as its food source. HCQ interferes with COVID-19 surface spike proteins and prevents them from dislodging the hemoglobin in the red blood cells. It also affects some aspects of cellular pH, preventing viral replication and entry. In conclusion, physicians may need to reevaluate treatment options and their basis of understanding for COVID-19 in light of its newly realized ability to induce hypoxemia in the patient. Added, reactive oxygen species in erythrocytes are generated through heme degradation. Displaced Fe, which is an element. I don't know what that means.
Iron.
Sorry, I didn't know the periodic table. Released after viral attack on hemoglobin is thought to be responsible for extensive free radical damage to the lungs.
Yeah, and even last night when Dr. Shiva was on my show, we were talking about the idea of the ventilators and how they're being used and how obviously they're life-saving equipment for so many different scenarios. But he was talking about how even in a traditional pneumonia setting, how if you really think about what's happening, if you have fluid in the alveoli or the alveoli, I forget how you say it. I remember doing that in fifth grade. Alveoli?
Yeah.
The little tiny air sackets that are at the very tips of every end in your lungs that make up your lungs. If you haven't drawn out that fluid in some way, then to hook somebody and intubate somebody and hook them up to a ventilator that's only going to push oxygen in an already filled up set of lungs. I mean, you're just increasing the pressure of the lungs. And that, I guess, goes even hand in hand with what this other doctor from Brooklyn was talking about, where he was actually taking a stance that this doesn't even look like viral pneumonia at all. But still, the same kind of approach should be reconsidered with the specific way that ventilators are being used right now, because if whatever's happening to people's lungs is stiffening them up to the point where there's already so much pressure inside of the chest cavity, then why the hell are we committing to just forcing more air inside of there, creating the pressure to become even greater? Mm-hmm. So I mean, even me from a background of nothing, I've worked in health and fitness, but more so on the fitness end and personal training, I understand the respiratory system pretty well and I have common sense. It seemed to make sense to me. So if that is what somebody who's in the field and is noticing on their own and saying perhaps we need to shift the paradigm on how we approach this, I hope that somebody of merit is listening, because it should be at least looked into.
The other thing, I was listening to your interview with him. Great interview, by the way.
Thank you.
You did a great interview with him. Everybody go to Frank's channel, Quite Frankly Podcast.
The demonetized channel on YouTube.
Yeah. Head on over to that one. Make sure you hear Dr. Shiva, because he's a brilliant. In terms of human beings, this man is a treasure. His mind is just fascinating.
Tracy, can you imagine having a voice like his joining a voice like Rand Paul or something like that in the Senate?
Oh, gosh.
Actually had, and especially if he were to replace a dimwit like Elizabeth Warren, can you imagine what the IQ of the Senate, the entire Senate, would raise by 15 points just by putting this guy in there?
They wouldn't know what to do with him.
No. He'd be too smart. And he's got such a great – and it's not a guy who goes in there, well, this man is very, very smart. He passed all of his tests with flying colors. He's got a grasp on natural law. He's got a grasp on what it means to be a free individual and what it means to decentralize arts and sciences, to improve arts and sciences, to make the world – to make at least our corner of the world a lot more efficient. If you're in Massachusetts and you listen to the show, you got to go and vote right now to make sure or assign your name to the petition to make sure that he is on the ballot in that state. You have to do it.
It was interesting because I listened to – he had like a three-hour interview or two-hour and a half interview with another channel, and I was listening to it, and he tells his whole story. He invented email.
Yeah.
Literally. And I interviewed him for American Priority. We were on the golf course. He was golfing with David Harris Jr., and I interviewed him for a minute, and he said he invented email, and I just kind of laughed. I didn't realize that he really did invent email. And I was listening to his life story. It is absolutely stunning. The guy was in one of the top universities in the country at like 15 or 16 years old, and he learned so much. He's brilliant. He's brilliant. And he's saying a lot of the same stuff that Celia Farber, who wrote for Uncover DC just yesterday, she submitted this piece. I put it up. About the PCR test and HIV and Dr. Fauci. And this is someone, Celia, I'm going to go through this really quickly again. Celia Farber was one of the only people one of the very few brave people reporting on the fact that there is literally zero scientific proof that the HIV, quote, virus causes AIDS. And it's true. There isn't any proof. And she... back 20 years ago when the AIDS crisis was in full swing, was writing for Harper's Bazaar and Spin and all kinds of different magazines. And they were publishing her pieces because they were ironclad. As a matter of fact, Harper's Bazaar almost had to shut down over one of her pieces. They left it up. They refused to remove it. That's how solid it was. Long, long story. I want to get her on the podcast to tell that story because she hasn't been able to yet. And it's incredible. But she was working on this, and she got in touch with the scientist, that created the PCR test. He was Carrie B. Mullis, and in this article, she talks about a lot of what he did, and she shares a lot of what he did. But what Fauci did with HIV and what Dr. Shiva was saying in passing in your interview with him about that stuff is absolutely true. That this, even if they're doing PCR testing on this for this virus, what constitutes a positive or a negative test is completely indiscriminate, and they can change it at will.
This is the month that I usually memorialize my late friend Liam Sheff, who did a lot of work, a lot of investigative work. He would have I can't even imagine what a field day he'd have right now. But he did an extensive breakdown on HIV/AIDS, especially HIV, the testing, the origins, what it really is.
The drugs killed more people than the virus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I have to. You know what? I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to record a special podcast where I just read this chapter, the HIV chapter in his book. It is so thorough. it is it's controversial. It really shakes a person down.
Yeah, this when I first started hearing this from her when she was trying to say, look at this, it's the same thing again. She's like, I lived through this. She was tarred, feathered. You have no idea what they did to this woman because the business of HIV is ridiculously profitable.
Well, once again, when you can attribute millions of deaths or however many millions of deaths, I think we're past a million or so. When you can attribute that much death to one cause, then you automatically, just through propaganda purposes, make it impossible to approach it and to question it and to talk about what may be misunderstood about the situation. Not that there aren't, not to deny that people have lost their lives.
No. That's the thing. They're not saying that AIDS doesn't exist. They're just saying that it's not been proven that it's caused by the HIV virus.
Right. What disabled the immune system?
Right. And you know, Koch's postulates he brought up yesterday, Dr. Shiva on your show, we brought up Koch's postulates. It's like four different criteria that you must meet in science to determine an outcome, especially in viruses and stuff like that. And I had heard that term for the very first time when we put out our first article on COVID-19 back in early January. And I was stunned at what I was learning, absolutely stunned. And I said at the time, Frank, right now is not, it just didn't feel like the right time to blast through the HIV thing. But there are so many parallels to it. And I know it sounds crazy and probably a lot of folks out there are like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm telling you, there is the science and the scientists that were tarred, feathered, And guess who's been leading the charge on HIV this entire time? Fauci.
Ratatouille.
Yes. Now, she has a couple other scientists in this article talking about this test, the pandemic. You know, these are people who are well known in their industry. These are not nobodies that are quoted in this article. And I got a lot of feedback on it. I would say it was 70-30. 70% of people loved it. 30% of people didn't. It's like 8,000 words, like everything that Celia writes. It's beautiful, I think, in prose. I think so. A lot of people think it's too long and not, you know, to the point enough. But in my opinion, you need to read the story to understand. You need to read the backstory to understand where we're at right now.
Indeed.
So I'm going to put it in the description box. But I really say, listen to the interview that Frank did with Dr. Shiva yesterday because it was brilliant. Great job, Frank. And then read this article from Celia. They're both saying the same thing.
Well, I can give you a time stamped link.
Perfect.
Because I haven't made a highlight yet, but I can give you the link from last night with the time stamp embedded into it. So it starts right at the interview if you want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, I mean, all things considered, we're all living through the same stuff, and it has become the sole story that we're covering. But I'm glad to see that it is starting to become flexible and break up a little bit to where we're finding ways to actually address other things that we have neglected over years.
Yeah.
You know, and then we're starting to question the way that the internal mechanism of the government's top medical minds have pretty much had a monopoly over everything that we have done. I mean, Dr. Shiva even brought it up again last night, how Fauci's been in there since what? Reagan, Bush 1?
Mm-hmm.
That's
the same thing that she says. When you have somebody who spans several administrations like that to over 20 something years, 30 something years, whatever. They're a part of the establishment, just like these people at the NSD or the State Department, these career bureaucrats like the Fiona Hills of the world. They think they run things at that. You know what I mean? They're so entrenched in it. He was right spot on. He's brilliant, this man.
Well, what it really comes down to there is that it's the same, and I'm going to talk about it tonight, tonight I have a an economic professor from Marshall University, Robin McCutcheon, coming on, and we're going to be talking about Marxist takeovers in school and what that kind of conditioning has been like over the years. And it all comes around. It's tied into a lot of things we talked about last night with money. That has money that is tax dollars that has been taken from us and distributed by the government and pumped into academia, science, the arts, and it politicizes things that should be free enough to go out there and find truth instead of reaffirming politics and bias in politics. It completely perverts sciences and arts. And when you think about someone who's able to spend six presidencies inside of the White House or inside the government in any official capacity like that, it doesn't matter if it's Fauci's position or the thousands of other people who have been there forever as well. You're talking about these people are dog walkers. You know, if they've been there for that long, I don't care if 60 million people vote for a president. That person doesn't care about the 60 million people who voted for any president. That president is the new dog on their leash that they must guide the president now in whatever ways that in whatever modalities have been established in the last 40 years they've been there. You know, I mean, yeah. Donald, what was Donald Trump doing back in the late 80s, early 90s? He was doing something much different than Fauci's been doing. Fauci's doing the same thing. He's been walking the dog the whole time.
And spending a lot of our money doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Pause for 1 second. So one more thing, Frank, on the whole COVID-19 thing. And we're going to get into a little bit of fun. We'll have a little bit of fun. And see where we go from there. But so you know that Medium piece called The Curve is Already Flat?
I think I've heard the title. I have not read it though.
There was a Medium piece that was up called The Curve is Already Flat. And I wrote my piece about flattening the curve or whatever and when we had this disease. And then this person had written their piece at the same time, basically. It was out a day or so before mine. And I didn't know about it. And then somebody shared it with me, and then everybody started sharing it with me, and then Ned Ryan had tweeted it, but Medium took it down. Medium has taken down literally every piece that has countered the narrative on this time frame issue. So I contacted her. Her name is AJK, and I asked if she would be okay with Uncover DC printing or putting up her article, The Curve is Already Flat, and I did. Now, the interesting thing about her story is that she takes a different tack with it. You know, while we're all saying we need to get back to work, we need the economy going and all that, which is very important. She says, I have a horse in this race, five of them, actually. I'm one of the millions of people paying a very high price. 15 months ago, I was diagnosed with a tumor in my liver. Because of its location, the risk benefit of performing a diagnostic biopsy on the mass was too low to justify proceeding. So my oncologist took a watch and wait approach. 6 months ago, I was relieved by a follow-up scan that indicated it had not grown. Nonetheless, in the last 2 weeks, I've developed GI symptoms that are consistent with the tumor spreading. As of now, I'm unable to get a scan to rule out the possibility of metastasis of my disease because the imaging necessary to monitor my liver is considered elective. And when the healthcare system finally does come back online, the backlog of patients like me will result in even more delays to access. Should the worst case come to pass for me and I later discover that I do have cancer that has spread and we miss the window to diagnose and treat it, my life will be one of the many casualties of the COVID response. And she goes on. It's something.
Yeah, it's pretty harrowing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this has not been lost on most people. What we're really doing here.
Yeah. Wanted to play something for you. And we pray for her because she's beautiful and I love her and she's a wonderful woman. And I got to talk to her yesterday and she's going to come on the podcast, Frank, because she has a lot of cool things to say. So she's going to come on. Yeah. She's fantastic. I'm so blessed to have met her. You ever meet someone and all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, this person's like my spirit animal from another life.
Yeah.
That's how I felt with her. She was so wonderful. Something that I sent myself this morning to play for you because it spoke to exactly what you were saying the other day about Iraq. Remember when you said, what about the death toll there?
Yeah.
It was this clip from President Trump's, President Trump's interview with Sean Hannity last night. I'm just getting to the right part. YouTube moved it and we're spinning.
Currency is very, very strong. The strongest in the world by far. It's also the biggest in the, by many, many times. It is really the only currency of there a little bit, but the euro is peanuts compared to the dollar. And we have a strong, powerful dollar. So when we go out for this, John, everybody wants to put it in, you know, they want to invest in the dollar. They want to invest in our country. So we're paying zero interest rate. I mean, we're paying like zero. So this would be a great time to do infrastructure when you're paying just about zero interest rate. I mean, we never had anything like this. Probably won't have another chance. But we spent $7 trillion, now almost $8 trillion in the Middle East. It's just a disgraceful decision that was made many years ago going into the Middle East. A sad decision. And you want to fix a pothole. You want to fix a pothole on a highway. And they say, well, we don't want to do that. We don't want to spend the money on that. Yet we spent $8 trillion and millions of people killed, if you look at both sides. And thousands of our soldiers are great people. Wow. And
good on him.
I just thought you would really appreciate that.
Yeah, no, good on him. If you look at both sides, millions of people killed. And who the hell, what president has acknowledged that? I don't remember. Did Obama? I mean.
No. He acknowledges the loss of human life and he takes it very seriously.
You know, that's one thing. That's one thing I have not heard a lot of people talk about. It really is that bad of a number.
I was listening to you this morning and I said, oop, got to play that for Frank today because.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. Then Gigi just sent me a picture saying that Dr. Birx's daughter, her LinkedIn profile says that she's the deputy director of strategy planning and management at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Ugh. Well,
anyway, want to do some fun stuff now for a little
yeah.
bit?
Yeah. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So yesterday I was on the Joe Pag show. And he's great. One of my favorites. We have a great time together. We did a good interview, but he does parodies. He does what he calls Pags parodies. And it's one of his like showcase things where he has a good voice and he creates like music and he does parodies of songs. And yesterday he played mine and he was saying, hey, Trace, Beans, would you sing the upper harmony for me in my parody? So I was like, sure. So I recorded this high harmony in this parody right before he aired and he threw it in there and actually put it in there. And so now I'm in a Pags parody and I don't know if you want to hear it. It's really only a little bit, but.
Yeah, let's hear it.
It was fun. Hold on. It's not a lot, but he did a whole big thing about it. Oh, and then I have my lizards from outside that were making love on my chair. That happened. Here we go. Come on. This keeps happening to me today.
What, you getting a spinning wheel?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know what it is?
What?
It's the internet getting ready to shut down.
I know.
I have a spinning wheel.
It's going to be July. We'll still be waiting for that one.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, we will. Here it is. All right. I think it cuts in a little bit after it starts, but here we go.
I'm interviewing Tracy Beans. What do you think I made her do?
That's not it. Hold on.
You made her.
We know.
I'm interviewing Tracy Beans.
Hey.
What do you think I made her do?
That's not again. It either.
See? You see? Nothing goes right when you try to do it live.
No, nothing does go right. I knew. I'm like, I have that clip right in my text messages. No big deal. Here. Everybody sing to themselves while I look for it. Here it is. Here we go. Hear it?
Cool, yeah.
She clearly is the highlight of the harmony.
Oh, so that's both of you guys.
Yeah.
You could have done that, Carrie. But you said no.
No, I don't think I could have.
Well, that was nice.
Hold on.
Washington may have the president.
so much fun, Frank.
Yeah, well, you guys melded together really nice there. There was, there's not a lot of clashing there. You guys were pretty good.
Well, I had to send him just a track of just me singing, right? And he had to meld it in there. So I had to re-engineer my studio here to do some vocal work, which has been years since I've done. But it was fun.
And you had to be in key to make it work.
Well, I mean, yeah. Absolutely. So, I'm a singer. I used to sing. My life was singing for decades. So if I couldn't be in key, it would have a big problem.
Yeah.
You know? But I want to do more now. Now I want to be like his backup artist. Like I want to do all of his parodies with him. And I love Joe Pags. And you know what was crazy? I was a little bit late yesterday. I had a computer problem. And he's like, I got the labor secretary coming up. Don't worry, Trace. Take your time.
Oh, he's interviewing heavy hitters like that, huh?
Yeah, he had Mark Cuban and the labor secretary on with him yesterday. He has interviewed the president several times. Hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was the show I got to be on yesterday talking about this flattening the curve thing. There's a lot going on behind the scenes with that, by the way. A lot more people know about that than you think. That's all I'll say. There's that. Well, more fun, though, Frank. We've got more fun.
What do we got?
We got Ally Beth Stuckey. Did you hear this?
Stuckey. What do I know the last name. Stuckey.
She does all those parody, like funny videos and stuff, and she's conservative Millman or whatever on Twitter.
Okay.
She is conservative Millen. It's conserve Millen, Millen on Twitter. This is hysterical. She titles it every single coronavirus briefing. And we're going to listen to the entire thing because it's that good. Ready?
Yep.
Crocodile.
Okay.
Question here. What do you say to the Americans who accuse you of being a terrible person? Mr. President, I have it on good authority that the reason why Dr. Fauci isn't here is because you and Vice President Pence threw him in a dungeon with crocodiles and alligators. Is there any truth to that? Do you ever worry, Mr. President, that you're acting too much like a fascist dictator? Why aren't you acting more like a fascist dictator? I wanted to know why you physically poured fish tank cleaner down the throats of the Arizona couple and if you'll be facing charges for that. Do you care that people are starving right now? Why haven't you shut down the grocery stores? Your silence on the two tigers that have contracted COVID-19 is deafening, and I don't even have a question. I just wanted to let you know. Thank you so much. Why do you keep bringing up hydroxychloroquine when there is a 0.00007% chance that someone could have an adverse reaction? I mean, like, why risk that? President Trump, as you know, there is a lot going on in the world right now, like a lot of death, a lot of sadness, a lot of chaos and confusion, which just leads me to the most important question, which is, why are you so mean to the media? Yes, why don't you shake hands with people? Don't you think it's kind of rude? I'm just wondering why you're not wearing a full hazmat suit and what kind of example you think that sets for the American people. So China has dealt with this just absolutely amazingly. I mean, they shut people inside their homes to the point where some of the people died just to stop this virus. And I'm just wondering, like, why that's not on the table here. Do you not care? Is there a reason why you're not hand making these ventilators yourself? Yes, thanks. So I'm just looking for rough timeline of when you think we could probably get back to reporting on the real news, which is the war on journalism. One more very straightforward, like totally objective, looking for the truth, no ulterior motives behind this. What is your defense to the people? I don't know who, but the people who say that you're an idiot.
That is, it's so funny. And she gets it down so perfectly because it's just that delivery. That's the press delivery. Mm-hmm. They're just, you know, it's almost as if they don't want to ask. But, you know, it's just a nagging question. Why do you keep blah, blah, blah?
Yeah.
Why do you? Oh, God. Throat punches for every last one of you. Throat punches for every last one of you. I swear to God. But she nailed that one.
She nailed it. Absolutely. I love it. I just love it. Absolutely love it. So,
oh, and the pretty boys that go out there and do that. I forgot who the hell is that guy I was listening to the other day. He kept on and going on and on about, but why with the hydroxychloroquine? But why? And he's so well manicured. Everything about him, from his beard to his hair, you can tell he spent at least 2 hours on himself that morning, because they're jokes. I miss growing up and thinking that the press was a bunch of pot-bellied, homely looking people, you know, that just
now they've got like that little, like the little freaking fake ass, like glimmer star that twinkles on their tooth.
Oh, it's GQ. The whole thing is GQ, and they want to be sex symbols. They want to be symbols of some kind of a resistance, and they just suck. They just suck.
That's why we need to have naked journalism, Frank.
Naked, ugly journalism. We need only ugly journalists.
Oh, well, I guess I can't be naked then. I don't think I'm ugly.
Well, we need to find somebody.
I think some people think I'm ugly, but I don't.
That's what I say. In 2021, let's get rid of all these pretty boys in journalism.
Well, I'm a girl, so that counts. I'm at least.
Yeah, girls can make an effort. But this is just ridiculous.
Let's shift gears real quick before we end the show today, okay?
Yeah, you got it.
Richard Grenell. This is from Intel chair. This is not what Richard said. This is what the tweet said. Intel chair Schiff sent a letter to acting DNI Richard Grenell, raising concern he's reorganizing without receiving congressional authorization, and asks him to produce info to a committee by April 16th. And she's got a copy of the letter. It's very long. He's very upset that he's restructuring the DNI and, you know, getting rid of all their cronies, right? Mm-hmm. Richard tweets this. His letter was sent to the press before I even got it. The press leaks politicizing the intelligence community have to stop. Which, to me, is just, he didn't even send the letter to the person it was addressed to before he sent it to the media. I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
Neither do
no,
you.
No, yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah. I don't have anything to say. I was going to bring something else on up. But I'll save that for Friday.
Why?
Nah, we'll save it for Friday.
Fine. You better remember.
Oh, I definitely will.
Okay.
What else was going on? You know, there are so many other things there, too, that I just kept things in the back of my mind. The Seth Rich thing with the FBI and the 302s.
Yeah.
There was a few others there, too. And it's so hard. It's like trying to catch a shooting star, you know, at this point with everything else that we're dealing with.
It's hard to focus on anything else right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm thinking, and I'm hoping, and I'm praying that the president and whatever loyal factions inside of the government that can be relied upon to actually pursue some kind of justice, they will not be caught with their pants down. And the second that there is an opening, the second that there is a window that is opened, they have got to jump through that window with everything they have, because the window will be shut and it will be filled with something else. We have already been given a preview of what's coming up with a new investigation into how this was all handled. Oh man. So one of those gaps has got to be taken advantage of.
I don't think they stopped investigating anything because this is going on. You're seeing stuff come out of the Justice Department all the time.
Yeah, but I'm talking about as far as capturing public's attention.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know, what can you do right now? I mean, there are things that would be so monumentally big that can at least compete with this pandemic.
Yeah, arrest
stuff.
All these bastards already.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I mean,
but then you'd be arresting vital public servants in the middle of the time when we need them all on the job. You know,
they made space for them in the jails. They let out all the pedophiles.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
They made space for them in all the places. Maybe. Why? Oh. That's not good.
What?
One of my domains looks like it expired.
Well,
looks like you better go take care of that.
Yeah, we're going to go now. I got a lot of things to do. I got to get out of here. Quick, 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 quick.
Well, it was great. Fantastic evening or morning.
Afternoon.
It goes live in the afternoon. This is a morning show to me still.
You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Disinfected Hump Day Val and
that sounds so gross, Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you on, oh my gosh, Friday.
Yes, another one gone. See you later.
Bye.
This is a Landry Football Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
You know, as we head towards the draft, I keep telling my brethren in the NFL, they're frustrated. We've talked about it. The preparation for the draft is so much more difficult. We don't have recheck physical, so the physical part is the biggest thing. Psychological testing, meeting with coaches, the players meeting with coaches, draft prospects, that's not happening. And so there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of unknown, a lot of insecurity about where we need to go. I'm under a little bit more stress than normal, helping to try to find out certain information to give any nugget morsel that might give greater insight, because you can Zoom and Skype and all you want, it's not the same. But as I try to tell my brethren in the league, people are going through with a lot worse. Quit complaining. No, postponing the draft is not going to do any good. Because as you know, because I'm comfortable in saying everybody listening is aware of what they're saying about our health issues, that this is going to get worse before it gets better. And there's not going to be a window to get guys a physical or an interview, so we need to move forward. So it's not fair. Life's not fair. And no, not everybody's in the same circumstance, because if you're a new coaching staff, you've had less time to assess things. If you're a veteran scouting staff and coaching staff, you got more time to assess things and get it right on draft weekend. Life's not fair. There's nothing fair about what's going on in the world today. So just look, we're going to go on with the draft and they're going to have to deal with less information.
The Landry Football Podcast with veteran scout and coach Chris Landry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.